This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today I'm going to be talking about Resident Evil, the final chapter, Gold, A Dog's Purpose, The Salesman, and Split, because I'm such an idiot, I forgot to review it last week. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news, I have to give a little bit of a sad piece of news that we have all heard by now, of course. Mary Tyler Moore has passed away this week. She was 80 years old, which is a good run. I mean, it's always sad to see somebody go, but she had a full life, not just personally, but in entertainment and television. She passed away from cardiopulmonary arrest because of pneumonia. And part of the thing that's kind of groundbreaking about Mary Tyler Moore, yeah, she did some movies and stuff. I mean, probably the most notable one was she was in Ordinary People back in 1980, and that, of course, won the Academy Award. But her real impact was on television. And if you're an actor or an actress, you're lucky to get one show that people will remember. And that's why, like Seinfeld, you know, Jerry Seinfeld had one show. He had Seinfeld, and that's it. Sometimes, in using the Seinfeld example, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, she had Seinfeld. She also had New Adventures of Old Christine. She's got Veep. She's lucked out and had several shows. Carol O'Connor was the same way with Archie Bunker's Place and All in the Family and In the Heat of the Night. And of course, you know, somebody like Bob Newhart had multiple shows, which shows a real powerhouse. And Mary Tyler Moore did this as well at a time when she was, you know, she was kind of groundbreaking back in the 60s. She was on the Dick Van Dyke Show. But then, of course, I mean, the Mary Tyler Moore Show was such a juggernaut in terms of good writing and good stories back in the 70s. It was such a groundbreaking show, and not just for some of the topics it covered, but, you know, it was one that was centered around a woman as a professional woman. It was a significant show, not just for the 70s, but also for women. It wasn't this crazy militant feminist show, but it also was breaking barriers, which is kind of fantastic. So, you know, she's going to be missed, but she's also certainly left her legacy on television, as well as some movies. The next piece I want to talk about real quickly is just a follow-up to something I talked about last week, which was the video, the set video that came out from A Dog's Purpose. Well, the producer, Gavin Pallone, came out with an article in The Hollywood Reporter talking about it. And a lot of what he said was stuff that I sort of predicted he was going to say. It was about the situation where he's like, there's many minutes of footage surrounding. There's like an hour of footage on either side of this incident. And in fact, they are two incidents that were edited together. And while he says, and rightfully so, that the dog was overstressed and probably should not have been pushed the way it was, he was not thrown in. And while it's bad for the dog to have gone under, they did immediately cut and go after him. So this is one of those things that was very deliberately edited and put out there in order to cause a problem for this movie. Because if they really had a problem with it, why didn't they talk about it a year and a half when it happened, not a week before it opened? This just seems like somebody who's just got an axe to grind against the production. And he was also talking about PETA. You know, look, I love animals and that's great, but PETA sometimes works against itself. They're trying to say there should be no animal actors in movies at all, which is, that's extreme. The last piece of news I want to hit really quickly, I just need to sound off about the Oscar nominations. They came out this week and, you know, sometimes there are surprises and sometimes there are surprises that there were surprises. This was not surprising, nor was it surprising that it was not surprising. This was one of the most boring Oscar nomination sets I've ever seen. Every single nomination was, well, okay, kind of expected that. I mean, there's some stuff that are like some dark horses out there. Viggo Mortensen was nominated for Best Actor for Captain Fantastic. And while some people, that's not on their radar, it certainly gotten some traction over the last couple months, it's not a surprise that that shows up in that list. Similarly, Amy Adams was not nominated for either Nocturnal Animals or what more people were expecting, Arrival. And that's a little odd because Arrival got so many nominations. But see, I hate to use the term snub because I don't think she was snubbed, mainly because if you look at the other actresses in the leading role, Isabelle Huppert, Ruth Negga, Natalie Portman, Emma Stone, Meryl Streep, you're telling me that you're one of those women didn't deserve that nomination? You know, you can only have five. The only possible snub you can say is like in the Best Picture category, when they have a potential 10 nominations and they only nominate 8 or 9, and they only nominated 9 this year. And a lot of people were talking, well, maybe they'll put in like Deadpool just to be crazy. And I would have loved to have seen that. But the Academy has no sense of humor about itself and has no interest in promoting something like Deadpool. So while it would have caused a lot of news and attention and probably gotten people to tune in just to see if Deadpool would win, they didn't put it on the list. I mean, it's all a very, it's nothing surprising about this list. I mean, yes, sure, Tom Hanks wasn't nominated. Oh, big, you know, nah. But there's other guys in there who are just as worthy of that. And yeah, there is, seems to be a patch over the Oscar So White controversy last year, because there's plenty of people of color in the nomination list. You know, like you got Dev Patel, and you've got Viola Davis, and you've got Ruth Negga, and you've got Octavia Spencer. So that sort of takes care of all the complaints from last year. I mean, unless like nobody of color wins, which won't happen because Viola Davis is going to win for Best Supporting Actress. No doubt on that one. And even Barry Jenkins is in the running for Best Director. Again, he won't win. It's going to be Damien Chazelle for La La Land. But there you go. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two trailers I want to talk about, both opening on March 24th. The first one is the more big budget crazy one, and that is Power Rangers.
Do you feel weird?
We're strong.
Insanely strong.
The answer to what is happening to you is here. You five are the Power Rangers.
Did I just hear you say we're Power Rangers?
Is this some kind of joke?
So where were you last night?
Me and four kids found a spaceship buried underground. I'm pretty sure I'm a superhero.
I know what they're trying to do with this. I know they're trying to live off the nostalgia of kids during the Power Ranger phase who are teenagers and 20-somethings now. And I mean, that paid off in spades for Disney and Pixar when they did Finding Dory. Became a massive hit. Didn't get an Oscar nomination, but it became a massive hit. I don't know if this is going to work. Part of the charm of the original Power Rangers, and I remember actually watching it when I was in college in the 90s, part of the charm of the Power Rangers were the cheesy effects. If you've ever seen the Inframan or the Ultraman stuff from Japan and Hong Kong and these crazy Asian martial arts fighting movies, that's what's kind of fun about them. They're big rubber monster suits. And even as they made more and more series of it and different groups of kids being Power Rangers, it never lost the cheesy elements. This looks like it's trying to be more like a Marvel superhero. And that might pay off like the Transformers movies did, but it also might kind of take out some of the magic, or it might not be able to find the right tone. That's what I'm a little bit concerned about, is that it's trying to be that tone because it's meant to be cheesy. The next one I want to talk about is Wilson, which stars Woody Harrelson as a guy who discovers that he had a daughter with his ex-wife who was put up for adoption.
My wife left me 17 years ago. I just need to move on, find somebody new.
Here she is.
Ooh, looks like your ex-wife put this girl up for adoption 17 years ago.
I'm a father! Yeah!
That's life!
How could you not tell me that we had a daughter?
What do you want, Wilson?
Don't you want to see her in the flesh?
What do you want to do, stalk her?
This looks pretty funny. It's based on a graphic novel by Daniel Clowes, which means that most likely Shia LaBeouf's going to release his own film with the exact same storyline, only with a different title. But no, this one looks interesting. This looks like one of those independent films from the 90s or early 2000s. Very sarcastic, at times sardonic, but also it looks kind of funny. I mean, it actually looks like it's got a good balance between depression humor and actual real humor. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be reviewing Split, finally, and The Salesman. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. I need to do some paperwork from last week. I had an absolute brain fart last week. I was doing the show. I even say in the beginning of the show, we're going to review this and this and this and split. And for some reason, I got to the end of the show, didn't even think about it, everything wrapped, and I'm thinking about it a little bit later, and I go, oh my, I didn't even review the movie. I teased it. I talked about it in the box office, but did I review it? No. When you get old, this is what happens. The little gray cells don't work quite that well, and you start to just forget entire swaths of your job. So I am going to backpedal a little bit, and let's review Split now. Since it's still a big movie. I mean, if this thing had bombed last weekend, I probably would let it go. But, I saw it and they screened it for me. Here I am. I was literally complaining they didn't screen The Resurrection of Gavin Stone, gave it a preemptive suck, and then the movie that they did screen, I didn't even talk about. So let's talk about Split. A man with multiple personalities kidnaps three girls and keeps them locked up for unknown purposes.
I've never seen a case like this before. 23 identities live in Kevin's body. Did something happen?
Open the door!
The human brain is the most complex object in the universe.
The only way we're getting out of here is if one of them decides to let us out.
I have a confession to make. I actually like a good chunk of what M. Night Shyamalan does. I loved The Sixth Sense. I was not a fan of Unbreakable. I know most people consider that the best movie. It was good. My problem with Unbreakable was that it felt like the studio came to him and said, okay, we want another movie, but it's got to have everything in it that The Sixth Sense had. It's got to have Bruce Willis. It's got to have a supernatural element to it. It's got to have a big twist at the end. It's got to have some crappy little kid that you're going to be having to feel for throughout the movie. But ultimately, I just didn't think that worked. I thought it felt forced. I thought that he was shackled by what the studio wanted. And I felt that that was meddled with. And especially the kid. The kid in Unbreakable is awful. Just terrible. But I even liked The Village to a certain degree, and I thought Lady in the Water was actually quite good. Now, once he started trying to do the big budget stuff, the tentpole movies like The Last Airbender and After Earth, it completely went down the toilet for him. Those are two of the worst movies ever made, let alone his worst movies he ever made. Now, he did sort of try to swerve back into sort of his wheelhouse. He did The Visit, which was okay. The biggest problem was it was found footage. But I thought that it was nice to see him kind of going back to the well because people always give him grief for being the Twilight Zone type director, but I like that stuff. I even liked when he did the M. Night Shyamalan Chronicles with Devil, which is that one about the people in the elevator. I actually really liked that movie. But ultimately, this is him going back to the thriller, the more intimate thriller, the either Twilight Zone or Night Gallery type of movie. And in that sense, it worked. Now, it has been out for a week, so I can say there's no big twist. You see a Shyamalan movie, and with the exception of the big budget stuff like Airbender and After Earth, you expect some big reveal that's going to unravel the entire film. Well, you don't get that in this movie, and that's fine. I mean, there's mysteries, and there's stuff that's revealed, and there's surprises, but you don't get that big Sixth Sense ending that backpedals through the entire film. And that's okay, though. I like the intimate storytelling. It's pretty cool. I mean, there's some problems with it. There's some logic problems with it, as you get it with any of his movies. I mean, like, they're stuck in this room and they can't get out, but there are hinges on the inside. Well, just take the hinges. I mean, does anyone know how doors work? Take the hinges off. The whole door will fall off. And the final ending, where everything comes together, where you get that final act, I did not think that was the strongest it could have been. In fact, it gets a little absurd and silly. But as a kidnap thriller, it's actually quite good. And his weirdly sterile approach to filmmaking with lenses that pull people close with wide angles and his techniques work in a situation like this. And in fact, James McAvoy, who plays the kidnapper, he's quite good. I mean, he does a really, really good job. I mean, playing with the multiple personalities. Now, this is not something that's ever going to get nominated next year for an Oscar. No one's going to care about McAvoy's performance because everyone hates M. Night Shyamalan. And I'm not even saying that it's an award-worthy performance, but it's a really good performance by James McAvoy. Now, he is playing somebody with DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, the real term for split personality. And in this sense, it's not terribly sensitive to mental illness, but it's a well-made thriller. There's a little bit of an Easter egg in there that I thought was a bit of a stretch. But overall, I enjoyed the movie. It did what it needed to do. It thrills and entertains for that 90 minutes, and then you can go home. So I'm going to have to say that Split kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Salesman. There's no trailer for this one because it's an Iranian film. It's directed by Asghar Farhadi, and he's best known for anybody, well, most, he's not best known in the U.S. for anything, really. But for anybody who follows film, the only way you may have heard of him is he did the movie A Separation, which won the Academy Award for Foreign Language Film a couple years ago. And that was from Iran. He's an Iranian filmmaker. And the reason A Separation was such a neat movie, especially from somebody like me, who's just a big dumb American, is it's an Iranian movie, and it deals with Iranian culture without being like judgmental, without it being, look how good or bad it is. It's just, it takes place within this culture, but it's a very realistic view of it. And it just tells a story within the constructs of Iranian culture. And that's kind of neat because you don't get that very often. And this one, The Salesman, is about, well, he's a teacher, but he's also he's an actor. He's a local community theater actor. And his wife is also a community theater actor. And they're doing a performance of Death of a Salesman. And one day while his wife's home, she gets attacked. She gets assaulted by somebody in the building. And it's this guy, of course, dealing with that struggle and the woman dealing with that. I mean, it's a drama, as you would expect. It's nominated for an Academy Award. It got nominated this week. And the man is then sort of hatching this plan to take revenge. And not just take revenge, but first he has got to figure out who was the person that assaulted her. And then he wants to take revenge on him. Now, it's not like a Dirty Harry type movie. It's not an Iranian version of that. It's a little more pragmatic. And of course, you are dealing with the cultural impact of a woman who's assaulted, which is obviously going to be handled very differently in Iran than it would be in the United States. But you also are dealing with the impact that is on their marriage, the impact on her security, and of course, the rage that he feels inside and the thirst for revenge that any husband would feel if this happened to their wife. And it's an interesting movie. And it's one of those movies that, like I said, it's sort of like A Separation. It takes place in Iran. I mean, there's no big, you don't forget that's in Iran, but it's not about Iran. It's just a story. And it just happens to be in this guy's culture where he lives. It's not hitting you over the head with the cultural differences. It's just that's where it takes place. So it's an interesting movie. And it's also interesting to see how they're dealing with Death of a Salesman and adapting it for the Iranian culture and the Iranian audience. It's definitely worth checking out if you want to see something in the alternative sect. It's certainly worthy of an Academy Award nomination for Best Foreign Language Film. The Salesman kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Resident Evil, the final chapter, and Gold. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Continuing ahead with the movie reviews, let's talk about what I think some people are thinking is going to be the big movie of the week, and that is Resident Evil, The Final Chapter. After losing her psychic powers, Super Soldier Alice plans a final battle against the zombie horde and the Umbrella Corporation.
My name is Alice. Running. Killing.
Alice, in 48 hours, humanity will be no more. There is a way to end all this.
Why should I trust you?
I can offer you something you want very much. Revenge.
Umbrella developed a cure. An airborne antivirus. I have to get to the Hive. It's our only chance now.
Here's one of those series that very much like the Underworld series, which they had their last episode a couple weeks ago, and it opened much lower than the other ones, even something like Rise of the Lycans, which was outside of that original series. Rise of the Lycans is sort of a prequel, and it didn't have Kate Beckinsale in it. At least the Resident Evil movies, they've stayed consistent with Mila Jovovich as the main character. She plays Alice, who kicks butt with these zombies. I remember when the first Resident Evil came out. Now, first of all, I'm not a big gamer. I've never played Resident Evil. I've never even really watched any of the gameplay videos that are probably out there on YouTube or elsewhere before YouTube was even a thing. The series started in 2002, and I've said over the years, and I even just said about a month ago when I was talking about Assassin's Creed, that video games generally don't make good movies, and that's because they're premise-based. They're give you a setup, and then the characters kind of have this open-ended journey, and that doesn't work in a movie itself. Resident Evil, the first one, was one of those films that kind of bucked that trend. It actually is a pretty decent action horror movie. And the reason it works is because, A, it's just a zombie movie when you boil it down. And zombie movies are just people trying to escape zombies either through a maze or in a city or something like that. And it also gives the setup for the entire series. You're trying to figure out how the zombie outbreak started. So there's actually some plot elements in the first movie. Well, then they started making more movies because the first one was a big hit. And they did a couple sequels going on, and the sequels were okay. But of course, they never quite lived up to that first movie. And then the last sequel came out. It was like 3.5 years ago. And that one didn't do nearly as well, and it was not good at all because it tossed the idea of a story out the window and essentially filmed a video game where they were going room to room trying to kill these zombies. And they'd literally come to another room and there'd be a boss that they'd have to defeat. It played like watching somebody play a video game. And that's not fun at all. I mean, nobody wants to watch somebody play. Well, I guess people do on YouTube now. I mean, I'm way out of it. Now, this one, they're clearly trying to wrap things up. And part of that's because Mila Jovovich was in her 20s when she started this movie. And she's in her 40s now. And nothing wrong. She still looks great. Don't get me wrong. But I think even her and Paul W.S. Anderson, who sort of spearheaded these movies, they realize this is kind of run into the dirt. It's been 15 years. And they can't make these forever. And, calling it the final chapter, calling something the final anything doesn't always work. I mean, there have been two final Friday the 13th movies, and they made sequels afterwards. There was, of course, Friday the 13th, the final chapter, which was part 4, and then they continued to make more, and then there was the final Friday, which was like part 7, I think, but then they made part 8, and then Freddy vs. Jason, and Jason X, and all these other things. This movie itself was better than I expected. It didn't get screened, no big surprise. I don't think they've screened one of these since like the third one. But I went to go check this one out just on a public screening, and it falls in a lot of the traps. It's nonsense action sequences. Also, the editing is so frenetic. There's so many cuts in this movie, it's almost hard to follow visually. Because you can. It's so much easier to edit movies digitally. I mean, maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago, it was probably edited digitally then on an Avid. Now, the ability to edit and tweak and change things digitally gives you so much control that it's maybe not a good thing to have that control. I mean, go back to something like Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is a pinnacle of action movies, and it's actually quite tightly edited, but it's also very sparsely edited at times. Even if you go to watch, like, Spielberg's movies now, they're not hiding bad filmmaking with quick cuts. And I feel that that's the way it is with this movie. Now, with that said, once the plot gets going, it's actually okay at times. I mean, it's stupid, and I wouldn't call it good, but it kept my interest a heck of a lot more than the most recent Resident Evil movie. I still don't think this one's going to be a big hit. I think it's going to connect with its audience. Part of the problem is you watch the trailers, and the trailers are a bunch of nonsense. And even this movie, they spend like 5 minutes in the beginning reminding you everything that's gone on and how we got to this point, sort of like a Supernatural episode. But there's so much stuff in this movie that's just kind of nonsense that's thrown in there that, you know, you're like, okay, like a zombie, it should just die already. So anyways, I mean, it's a Resident Evil movie. If you like the other ones, you're going to probably like this one. I said before when I did Underworld that you could have probably had a crossover and with this and Underworld, and that would be like the last movie they can make, because both these series, I think, are coming to an end in 2017 because Underworld underperformed, and I imagine the same thing's going to happen with this one. So even though there's some things I liked about it, I still have to say, quite honestly, Resident Evil, the final chapter, kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Gold. Matthew McConaughey, gains weight and loses his hair to play a fortune hunter who teams up with a geologist to find a gold mine in Indonesia.
This gold business wrote me off years ago, but it's amazing how little gold does can just change everything.
What are we talking about?
I had a dream.
Right here.
Indonesia.
That's where we'll find the gold.
Wait!
We found nothing and the workers are leaving.
Wait.
Look, we got a gold mine.
Of course, all the buzz of this, all the news is that Matthew McConaughey gained weight and was getting a receding hairline for this movie, which is nothing. First of all, he already has a receding hairline. He just uses a comb over in this movie. But he gained weight. Look, man, I do that on my own. I've been gaining weight for years, and never once have I gotten any sort of accolades or Oscars or any sort of buzz from Hollywood about it. So, doggone it. Quit praising Matthew McConaughey for covering his abs with delicious flab when I do it already. I've got a keg. I don't even have a six pack. Anyways, Gold is a release that was out there for award season, but you notice it's gotten no notice for it. People are just thinking, oh, it comes out in January. Well, technically it's a 2016 release. I got a screener for it. It got no traction whatsoever. And there's a reason for it. Once you get past the whole Matthew McConaughey got fat for this movie story, there's not a whole lot to this film. It's frankly very boring. The characters are completely unappealing. And it's almost, it's like not convolutedly written. I mean, I understood what was going on, but it was just murky. It just didn't have a good drive to it. And it's, I think it's trying to be sort of like a Wolf of Wall Street type movie, showing the behind the scenes of finance and industry and the hardcore treasure hunter who's, you know, betting the farm in order to win something and maybe swindle people in the same process. But honestly, I was talking to somebody, I was doing an interview, and they asked me about a scene that's in the trailer where he's petting a tiger. And I'm like, you know, I don't even remember that part from the movie. I don't know whether it was in the movie. I watched the entire film. But I think sort of like how people who are victims of trauma, their minds will block out unpleasant events. I feel that my mind has put a wall up and blocked out a lot of the details of this movie, because even though I sat through the whole doggone thing, I really don't remember much of it. I mean, the acting's fine. Matthew McConaughey does a fine job. Bryce Dallas Howard actually does a really good job in her role. It's just what they're given in terms of character and story. It's not even bad. It's just boring. I had a friend in college who was a big advocate of the arts and everything, and it was during the whole Mapplethorpe thing. And I remember my friend saying, he's like, I don't get offended at stuff, but don't bore me. You can take everything I hold sacred, put it in a jar, and pee on it. Just don't bore me. And that's kind of the way I feel about Gold. I didn't even hate the movie. I just was so bored by it. And maybe part of it's because it has Edgar Ramirez in it, who I've been railing against for years. This movie, there's no two ways around it. Gold sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about A Dog's Purpose, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup. There There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The final film I want to talk about is A Dog's Purpose. We talked a little bit about this in the beginning with the controversy that's in the news. If you want to hear that, go, you know, find the archive of this online and go back. But here, let's talk about the movie itself. Let's ignore the hubbub that's being caused in the press. We see the world through the eyes of a dog who is reincarnated with different owners over the years.
What is the meaning of life? Are we here for a reason? Is there a point to any of this? And why does food taste so much better in the trash? This was me, and then this was me. Then I came back as this little guy. A lot of lives for one dog to live, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm a new soul. For me, it all began with a boy. His name was Ethan.
Bailey, 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 Bailey.
My name was Bailey, 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 Bailey.
I'm a huge dog fan. I've had dogs since I was in college. My parents didn't have a dog when we were kids. And it's funny, when my sister and I finally convinced my parents to get a dog when we had both graduated from college, they suddenly became crazy dog people too. Now, I'm not the crazy dog person who dresses them up and has birthday parties for my dog necessarily, but I love dogs. And I've had a dog ever since we got that first dog when I got out of college. And of course, when I got married, then we got a dog and that one passed away a while back and we got another one. She's getting kind of old. She's slowed down quite a bit. And you know, I mean, I know her days are numbered. She's not going to be around, you know, for 10 more years. But I love dogs. I think they are part of the family. I'm much more of a dog person than a cat person, partly because I'm allergic to cats. So I come across that naturally. But when it comes to dog movies are really an easy sell. But they can sometimes be botched. And I'm not saying that A Dog's Purpose is botched, but it does fall into some traps that represent dog movies that I don't particularly like. Like, a great dog movie is Marley and Me. And part of the reason why Marley and Me works so well is because it's an intimate relationship between this guy and his dog throughout the years, and how he brings it into the family, and of course, how he emotionally is attached to it. And of course, you know, everyone knows the dog dies at the end of Marley and Me. So you have that situation where most people who have had dogs have had one pass, at least one pass away in their lifetime. Now, this film, it's about a dog, and yeah, it is, and the dog stuff's really great. And it is kind of neat to see the dog going from owner to owner, but there's a big chunk of it that's mainly about this one owner he had, which was this kid who loved on him, and he grew up with the kid, and the kid went off to college and has his own story, and then, of course, the dog passes away and is reincarnated, and we see it go through a couple different lives. The problem that I had is, like, within that story, the bulk story, I mean, the other stories of the dog going through life, it's about the dog, but the story where he bonds with the main guy, it's really not about the dog, it's about this guy, and I found the human characters kind of boring. This is the problem that happened with that movie Max, if you remember that one about the army dog that came back and had trouble readjusting to being just a regular dog. The problem that had is that I didn't care about the human characters. I was like, no, I like Max. I want more about the dog. Oh, who cares about this guy and his kid and his relationship with his parents? It's boring. I want to know more about the dog. And see, Marley and Me, if you were to take the dog out of Marley and Me, you wouldn't have a movie. That's showing the real power of a character. If you can take a character out of a movie and you still have a coherent film, then the character is not about him or her. And in A Dog's Purpose, if you took the dog out of this whole storyline, you'd still have the story. It just wouldn't be told from the dog's point of view. And that's part of my problem. It gets sidetracked and distracted with the human characters. And it's sort of like when they made The Muppets, the first reboot that they did a couple years ago. They had Jason Segel and Amy Adams star in it. And as compelling as they are and good actors as they are, I didn't want to see a movie about the two of them. I want to see a movie about the Muppets. They just kind of got in the way. And that's kind of how I feel about the human characters in The Dog's Purpose. But still, I mean, it's a cute little movie. I mean, I wouldn't take like a 2-year-old to it. The kid's not going to understand. You don't want a kid to be 6 or 7, at least, you know, old enough to watch this movie and understand what it's like to have a dog. If they can talk coherently in full sentences and carry on a conversation, they might be good to see this movie. So it is a sweet little movie. And, you know, if you've ever had your dog die, it's going to tug on your heartstrings. It's going to make you cry here and there. It's a cute movie. It's just like I said, I didn't care about the human characters all that much. But still, A Dog's Purpose kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. And was I right? Here's the thing. Last week, I said that XXX and Split were going to be fighting for number one, around 20 million. And then I also said that Hidden Figures could have possibly had a chance of taking it again. Well, Hidden Figures didn't. And as good as Hidden Figures is, it didn't stand a chance against Split. Now, first of all, XXX, The Return of Xander Cage, did do okay. It did 20 million. It did about what I was saying it would do. And Hidden Figures did a little less than 16, which is still, that's really good. This movie's going to crack 100 million before it's done. And the Oscar nomination certainly don't hurt it. And The Founder just made about 3.5 million, and it came in just under top 10. But Split was the surprise. No one expected Split to do as well. It did $40 million last week, and that's an incredible number for like a January 20th opening. I didn't think that this one would do that well, but I mean, apparently audiences are ready to forgive M. Night Shyamalan, and audience can be compelled by a good trailer, which I think this one certainly was marketed well, and it certainly delivers on what it markets to, and that's part of the reason why I think it did so well and had such staying power. Now, this week, it is possible that Split could take the weekend again. I think A Dog's Purpose is going to do okay, but I think it's going to suffer from the bad press, which is a shame because it's a cute enough movie. And that report was, you know, like I said, consider the source. If it's something's coming from TMZ, that's not a reputable source. There's real journalistic outlets that vet their material. TMZ just does stuff for clicks and sensationalism. But I think that's going to cause A Dog's Purpose to suffer a bit. And I think Resident Evil is not going to do very well. I think it's going to do about as good as Underworld did, which wasn't very good. The Underworld movies and the Resident Evil movies all made about $20-some million. It's opening weekend. I don't think this is even going to come close to that. It's going to struggle for 12, maybe. I actually think Split's going to have a better weekend in second run. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is going to be on Ouija, Origin of Evil, which came out last week on DVD and Blu-ray. This prequel to the sleeper hit from 2014 goes back to the 60s when a widowed mother raising her daughter encounters deadly spirits that connect to them through a spirit board.
Your sister's taking you to school today.
I don't want to go!
I want to stay here and talk to my friends.
What friends?
I'll show you.
Something is happening that we can't understand.
I'm concerned about your girl.
What's this about, Father?
What are you doing? I'm not doing it!
The spirit world is dangerous.
They were watching us all those years.
By using the board, you've opened up a portal.
I did not see this movie when it came out because that weekend, nothing was screened that week in October that it had come out, and there were other movies that I was juggling at the time. So I actually had a chance to check it out this week. Now, it's directed by Mike Flanagan, who did movies like Oculus. He's kind of the little horror filmmaker that could. He does some really good stuff. And so when I heard that he was doing this, I was actually looking forward to it. Because I said, even though I didn't like Ouija, the original, because I thought it was just poorly done and kind of boring and silly and not a good horror movie, this guy knows how to do horror. And I will say, he certainly did a really good job with this film. And sort of spinning off of the popularity of some of the James Wan stuff, particularly how The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2 were period pieces. And, you know, it was something like It Follows, which was a modern movie. It took place in contemporary America, but it had a feel, like a throwback feel to it. There's a lot of, that seems to be the trend right now. And I love it because I grew up in the 70s and 80s and I love those horror movies from those days. So Ouija Origin of Evil taps into the nostalgia, but it also allows it to be a little more deliberate. Now they do little things too. Like there's cigarette burns in the movie. If you don't know what a cigarette burns, if you used to go see movies in theaters where they did reel to reel projection, you see a little blip. And if you, they talk about it in Fight Club, there's a little black circle that appears on the top right-hand screen, and that's a signal to the projectionist to change the reel of film. Now, in modern movie houses, you don't notice it because it's all spliced together. But they put cigarette burns in the movie, and they do a little bit of a gate bump when the reel would change, even though it's all digital. So they give a certain feel of it being in the 60s, and it's a pretty creepy movie with some real creepy kids. It gets real pear-shaped near the end. It kind of goes completely bonkers trying to tie the two movies together, and like sort of like that last 10 minutes aren't very good. But all the way up to that is really quite strong. So I'm going to have to say Ouija Origin of Evil, surprisingly, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
The other movies that are out this week, you've got Inferno, which I liked. You also had The Light Between the Oceans, which I guess is a good love story, but it bored me to tears. The Man Who Fell to Earth, David Bowie's film, got a Blu-ray release this week. And then Sherlock Season 4, the new version of the BBC Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch, is now available on Blu-ray and DVD. And that is it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Rings, The Space Between Us, and The Comedian. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.